From listener-supported KTOO, welcome to A Juno Afternoon. It's Wednesday, June 14th, 2023. I'm your host, Boston Christopher Gunathchishawa, for joining the conversation. On today's show, author Kate Troll went looking for a half-sibling, but found way more than that. We'll chat with Kate about her new book, All in Due Time, a memoir of siblings, genealogy, secrets, and love. We'll have a sit-down with the Juno Arts and Humanities Council, who will catch us up on arts events for this month. Plus, we'll talk about the Ruddy Awards, now open for nominations, celebrating Juno's creative citizens, organizations, and businesses. And we'll share a couple of announcements about the Hokulea departure tomorrow, and a couple of opportunities to tune in and hear local musician Annie Bartholomew, whose album drops on Friday. Those conversations, Sounds Wild, Star Party, music, and more, coming up this hour on A Juno Afternoon.
This June, we're raising the final funds needed to close out our budget year on the 30th. When you make an additional gift, renew your membership, or sign on for the first time, we'll gladly thank you with one of our member gifts, including mugs and bags of coffee with logo art by Undachten Stephanie Tripp,
then you hear
or
yourself.
A digital subscription to the
New York
Times.
I just have to do
Times.
It to monitor.
All funds raised now will go right into funding the programming you rely on every day. Give at ktoo.org.
You're listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Many will remember my first guest, Kate Troll, as an assembly member. Today, Kate is an author, op-ed columnist, wilderness adventurer, and speaker on conservation and climate issues. She's been published in the Washington Post, the LA Times, and The Nation. Her new book is a memoir. Memoir.
The thing is, you don't want to make it a me-moir. You want to make it more than that.
It's called All in Due Time, and it's about the search for family and other topics that stem from our genetic paths. Kate Troll, Gunathchish, for being here, and welcome to the studio.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
It's so welcoming. It's so good to have you here. So let's explore your background a little bit before we jump into the new book. Your work and your life has taken you down many paths. Will you share a bit about your path and how it led to where you are today? Or does that take like 4 hours?
No. The short version is I moved up here in 1977 with a master's degree in natural resource management. You know, Alaska is a great place to start that type of career.
Absolutely.
But my very first job was driving a cab in Anchorage.
Oh, wow.
So how's that, you know, during the oil pipeline boom days.
Oh, okay. Back in the 70s, right?
Yeah. Talk about a cross section of Alaska. And then I moved to Ketchikan. My husband had a job there, but I got immersed into fish politics in Ketchikan. I was the executive director for Southeast Saners Association. And then that put me on the board of United Fishermen of Alaska and, you know, got very involved in fisheries issues. And that sort of became my main drive for a long time. I expanded into fish marketing, trying to develop new markets for Alaska salmon, was a fisheries development specialist for the state of Alaska. Oh, and then in Ketchikan, I was also on the assembly there for 3 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I've been elected twice to two different assemblies. Then moved to Juneau, and obviously I still kept engaged in fisheries issues. Then I started to have an interest in climate and energy issues. So you got involved in that starting in about 2006.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And then retired, but I wanted to put my energy into writing. So that's where I started really focusing on being a columnist. And that's my primary style of writing. So this writing here was very different for me. And I actually hired a book coach to kind of help me along, because when you write for a column, you kind of want to quickly set the stage so people know what the topic is, but then you lay out your facts very succinctly, you know, 1, 2, 3, and get to your strong close. Well, when you're writing a memoir and a story, you know, you have to invite people into your lives, and you need to exaggerate a little bit, extrapolate, you know.
Right, right.
Expound, if you will.
Yeah.
And so that was what was different for me here.
Oh, that's cool. I'm talking with Kate Troll. This is Juno Afternoon. We're talking about her new memoir called All in Due Time. And so from coastal management to climate and conservation, and this led to your first memoir called The Great Unconformity.
Right.
Tell us a little bit about that one. How did you get there? How did you get to writing that?
Well, I always felt that if you have something important to say, you wrap it up in a story and it begins to stick with you. And I learned a lot of lessons in Alaska. You know, Alaska is a great place to appreciate the environment, but it's probably one of the more difficult places to work in on behalf of the environment, you know. So by working in association with the state's largest industry, that allowed me to kind of, you know, wear an industry hat, but then work on conservation, kind of climate related issues. And then I decided to wear a straight up conservation hat and worked for the Alaska Conservation Alliance and Alaska Conservation Voters. Anyway, so I had lots of important things to say in terms of my experience and insights, and also wanted to deliver a message of hope.
Okay.
You know, because you can get involved in these topics and you can just get yourself really down.
Like it seems like it,
like oh my God, we're never making any progress anywhere, you know, and
yeah.
stuff like that.
Yeah.
An example is back, you know, about 20 years ago, getting the Renewable Energy Grant Fund started. We did that and we pushed it primarily because of the price of diesel in the villages. It was, the energy costs were crippling many people in the villages. We didn't have to mention climate change.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we just drove it on the economics. So, anyway, I'm getting a little ahead of myself. So what I did in The Great Unconformity was try to mix my adventure stories. You know, I climbed Denali. I've run wild rivers like the Tatshini Alsek. I've climbed Kilimanjaro. You know, so
yeah.
I bring you along on my adventures, and then something happens in the story that allows me to pivot and bring home another key kind of policy insight and a reflection of hope for the future.
I see. Okay.
So that was a challenge in writing as well.
Yeah.
You know.
And how did you decide originally? Because I'm always curious about this, because you've had this, you know, sort of varied career doing all these wonderful things. Had writing always been sort of an interest of yours? And so that's how you started with the being a columnist?
Yeah. I thought I was going to go to school to be a journalist, and I realized I like writing for myself more than I like doing the how, when, there kind of thing.
Sure.
And I joke in that, like, my brother Ray, who's extremely creative in everything he does, the one art form he'd ever dealt with was writing. So I went, okay, this is safe. I'm going to go here.
Okay, that's where this troll will be going. I get you. Okay.
Yeah.
That makes total sense. I mean, just to figure that out. And what's the – I'm curious about this too, like, what's the process of writing like for you? Do you have a specific time you do? Do you get up every day and get a cup of tea and then sit down? Or is it like when the inspiration strikes you? How does your process work as a writer?
For me, it's more when the inspiration strikes me.
Okay.
Like an example is I just came back from seeing the most epic concert ever. Joni Mitchell and Brandi Carlile and friends.
What?
At the Gorge. Yeah. Yeah. And
that's a once in a lifetime.
Total.
Yeah.
It was transcendent on so many different levels.
Yeah.
You know, I knew I had, once I get a title in my head, then the rest will flow.
I see.
You know,
okay.
So the title is Joni Mitchell Does Know Life After All. Right? And it just flows. So
yeah.
Oftentimes when I'm thinking about a column, it's when I get motivated by things I read, but more like when the first line or the title comes to me, then I know that's when I have to write it. Because if I let that go too long, the juices start to kind of dry up.
Sure, sure. Yeah, because and some days, I mean, I know that there's writers who like have a specific time and they just sit down.
I'm not that disciplined.
I could be that way either, but
no.
I know Arthur Miller was like that. He just sat at the typewriter, and if you don't have anything, you don't have anything, I guess. But, you know, it's like, but I guess if the, but especially as a memoir, it's sort of like, as stories and ideas about what's going on in your life and how they relate to some of the other issues that you're also dealing with, themes that you're dealing with inside the two books that you've done.
Right, right.
Like as those stories come to you, that would be like, oh, I got to go and write that down, right? Like
exactly. That's how I operate,
yeah.
As opposed to being a very disciplined career writer where getting up
yeah.
Oftentimes the morning is a good reflection time for most people. But for me, it was more mid-afternoon after my dog walks and things.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's really no right way. And especially if you don't have a timeline, right? If you don't have like a deadline.
Right.
And you're just doing it for yourself or for the creativity aspect.
But I actually learned how to write on deadline when I was,
because
I was a regular columnist for the Anchorage Daily News for about 3 years and also for the Juneau Empire for about 5 years.
Yeah.
And so I learned how to capture that creative muse on deadline.
So when it comes to crunch time, that can
happen.
I can do it. If you need to, right? But it is better to have a little bit more openness and flow.
Right.
Okay, so this new memoir, The All in Due Time, A Memoir of Siblings, Genealogy, Secrets, and Love, a very intriguing title.
Thank you.
How did this come about?
This was a story that just happened as it took place. So I went looking for a possible half sibling and found two full siblings.
Whoa.
My parents had 8 of us, not just 6 of us. And and this story had its own natural twists and turns. It was... I didn't have to create. Oftentimes when you're writing something, you want to have a good catch and a twist and bring them into a new direction.
Yeah.
This one just happened naturally.
It was happening.
So yeah. I knew that this was a phenomenal experience, particularly when you consider all my siblings. I affectionately call them the Troll Tribe. It had a great cast of characters, and the discovery path, it was not a linear path. It wasn't like A leads to B leads to C. It was kind of a circular path and came around. So it was a natural thing to write. The challenge was trying to capture in a way where I get people invested in me. If you're going to read a memoir, if you're not a famous person or the first to summit Mount Everest or something like that.
Yeah.
You need to get the reader invested in who you are.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the first aspect of the writing. And then the next aspect of it was to introduce the whole cast of characters and then take you on this kind of bumpy ride of discovery. And I wanted to make it more than just a discovery story so that it would have more resonance and be more relevant to today.
Mm-hmm.
So as an example, in parts of the book, I explore the question of how much of our political ideology is affected by our genetics.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, it was fascinating.
What did you discover? We don't want to give away the whole book, but I'm just curious, like, because I know there's other things in there too. You there's some other stuff that comes up in terms of genetics and you're sort of relating it to life and stuff. But like, what is that? What is that political ideology and is it related to genetics? That's a theory, I guess.
It's a theory. So it's not that there's one gene that triggers your politics, but it's how those genes get expressed. And I guess they've determined that there's some genes that are more activated toward compassion. And then there's one gene that's more activated toward wanting everything to be controlled and authoritarianism. Okay. So that kind of gives you a little bit of the spectrum. And how those genes get expressed tend to be tied to our genetics. They figure about 30 to 40% of how those genes get expressed are a function of our genetics. And that means the greater amount, you know, 60, 70% is more influenced by where we grow up.
Environmental.
In our environment and all that. But it was interesting, and I don't want to give, I don't know, I'm going to stop right there because I don't want to, I don't want to give too much away.
Yeah, but like the, so this journey, so you, and I'm assuming that some of this theory that comes out in, you know, the genetic question about political ideology might be when you mate these two full siblings and you start to recognize
the similarities. And we discover that we're all progressives.
Right. So you
Even the siblings that were raised in the South by separate parents.
Yeah. So there's connections that are.
Yeah. That was a big, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
You know, so
it was the, and it's interesting. So you had this hint of a half sibling that was a sort of a family history, a family.
It showed up on my birth certificate. It was an anomaly, but my parents were Irish Catholics and they both served in the service during World War II. So they hid the fact that they had to get married because of my older brother, Tim.
Okay.
So they never celebrated their anniversary. There was never a wedding photo anywhere. This was all taboo, you know. Talking about how they got together. I mean, they grew up in the same town. But, you know, there was, like I said, there was never a single wedding photo anywhere. It was just a topic that was off limits. So when I noticed this anomaly on my birth certificate, I had to figure out how I could approach my mother about this because I didn't really want to go to the taboo area and upset her, you know. So I happened to be pregnant at the time and she said, oh, that was just a little miscarriage, but I knew better. But talked about it with my siblings and we all decided that we would just, you know, let that lie. Back then, you know, when I discovered this anomaly, that was like 35 years ago, there wasn't much way to do much digging. You didn't have DNA testing. You didn't have the internet.
Right.
You know, so it would have taken somebody to be doggedly going to courthouse county records, prison records, and none of us wanted to do that. So it wasn't until an odd relative showed up on my daughter's DNA test, where this person had more DNA than my first cousin. And I know all my first cousins really well. So that was like, So I took the test and the same person showed up on my DNA test. So that was the first clue that, okay, there's something here. So that allowed the path to open up where before, even if we wanted to, we really couldn't have opened up the path.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, man, that is an amazing thing. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm talking with Kate Trolland about her new memoir, All in Due Time. And I'm imagining that when there's six children, and this, you probably go into this, but when these two full siblings are discovered, that the reaction from all of the other, the original six, we'll call them at this point.
We're like, actually just five now. I lost a sister.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. Yeah. But was the reaction like, holy moly? Was it like, wait, what? How did this happen?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. It was a shock to all of us.
Yeah.
You know, and then we have the internal debates. Did our father even know?
Yeah.
You know, that he had another son and another daughter.
Oh, wow.
You know, so that's, I can't say too much.
I know, you got to read the book.
I want you to read the book. But that's kind of
makes it. I'm just trying to tease people.
Yeah,
that's
what kind of makes it fascinating.
Yeah, there's so much, so many layers. It sounds like there's a lot of layers.
There's a lot of layers, you know, and what I warn people is, you know, that when you do the DNA test, they kind of should come with a warning on it. Can be hazardous to your emotional health, you know.
Yeah.
Many people discover, oh, their father was a sperm donor or you know, a half-sister that they were totally surprised about it, whatever.
Right.
But this is kind of a positive outcome to the whole discovery. And I have a very loving, incredible family. So yeah. I had to put a lot of stock in my family that they would really rally around and come together. And that's indeed what did happen. But there are bumps along the way, and I show those bumps. Also, I had to respect the fact that even though we're a close family, we each have to come to these resolutions in our own way and in our own time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had certain siblings that I couldn't just, hey, isn't this wonderful? No, because it opens up a chapter that is sad.
Mm-hmm.
It's sad that my mother gave away to of her babies.
Yeah, you go into it a little bit. I mean, I know there's, you talk about your mother being sent off to live in a home for ostracized women and unwed mothers.
Right.
And I'm sure that's part of the quote unquote dark history that maybe is part of that. And the shame that was happening in that time period to women who were maybe having unwed pregnancies.
You know, and my mother was a professional woman who served in the Women's Army Corps. She had a degree as a dietitian. So, you know, but they're, women back then didn't have many choices. You know, they birth control was not an option for them. So I wanted to make this also a reflection on how far, you know, women have come today.
Yeah.
But I wrote it before the Supreme Court decision on Roe v. Wade.
Yeah.
So I hope we don't slip all the way back. But
yeah.
Any event.
I want to go back one sec for to the book coach as well, because it sounds like you know, you have a history of being a columnist, and then this person, the book coach, was helping you formulate how to, as you mentioned, like, because, you know, it's not a famous person writing the memoir, but somehow to capture the attention of the audience at the beginning of the book and sort of set up the tone and kind of what kind of journey we're going to go on. Is that what a book coach does for you?
To some degree, but I had that fairly well done. I have a distinct writing style, so a book coach isn't going to try and change your style. But what she did was prompt me at key points.
I
want to know more of this.
Okay.
Tell me, this is your chance to give us insight about your mother. Tell us more there.
Right, right.
Okay, what were you really feeling here in this part?
I see.
You know, because I tend to get... I'm succinct and tend to get right to the point. And that helped me a lot. Was like,
and I guess with a memoir too, it's maybe areas that you're like maybe shying away from. And so the book coach is like, hey, maybe you got to dig a little bit deeper here.
Right. Exactly. Right? That's what she provided for me.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
And to help make the story full.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is awesome. Now, this book is available, I know, at Hearthside.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Is it available?
It's also at that A place.
Well, we know it's online. You can definitely order it online. I try to push the local.
Absolutely.
As much as we can. And you had an event there recently, right?
Yes. On the first Friday, and it was a great turnout. And it was lovely because my daughter, Erin, accompanied me. She played the music. And,
oh, that's so nice.
Yeah, it was very nice. So, you know, Juno is a wonderful supportive community. I'm a member of 49 Writers.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And the group of writers here are very supportive of each other. And, and that definitely helped me along. In fact, I first started trying to write this at a 49 Writers retreat out at the Shrine.
Oh, okay.
Many years ago.
Wow.
Several years ago.
So it's been in the works for a while. It's been in your brain.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, once this unique story started unfolding, I was starting to keep notes.
Yeah.
You know, but I didn't know if I could finish it until we get to the end.
You got to have an ending.
Yeah. You know, you know, I also had to make sure that family members were okay.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah.
And so, you know, in some places I change, it's a work of nonfiction, but I definitely change names and places in key places to protect the privacy.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what's next, Kate? Is there something in the works? You got other things rattling around in the brain pan?
Oh, I'm pretty busy right now because we just brought in our third Ukrainian family to Juneau.
Oh, wow.
You know, yeah. And there's a couple other families that want to come to Juneau. And so that's, and as I have said before, everybody's heard the saying, it takes a village to raise a child. Well, it sort of takes a village to relocate families.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know,
yeah.
And Juneau's a wonderful, responsive community for that. And
yeah.
So that, and it's summer. I want to play. I want to get out my kayak. So I don't have any other riding. What next?
Yeah. Well, congratulations on this new book.
Thank you.
It sounds amazing. I know we can find out all about your history. Your website is great. It's katetroll.com. That's two L's, katetroll.com. You can find out, I love that you put your whole history on there, Kate, in terms of your background and all the different things that you've done in your life, as well as you can find out a little bit about
The
Great Unconformity, as well as
right.
this new book, All in Due Time, A Memoir of Siblings, Genealogy, Secrets, and Love. Such a great title. It's available here in Juneau at Hearthside Books. You can also find it online.
That's a good way to put it.
We'll just say it that way. And you can go to katetroll.com and you can find the ways to find that online. So good to teach for being here today, Kate, and telling us a little bit about this.
Thank you. This was a great conversation.
And intriguing us a little bit. And why don't we go out with a little bit of Downstream by your daughter, Erin Heist.
Awesome.
I was born on these tidelands 30-some years ago. Learned as a young girl to watch that ebb and flow. Water's always changing quicker than you know. Keep your eye on the sounder, steady as you go. We'd swim in that water so deep and so black. Bright waves up and about, never looking back. Tell our secrets to the wind like we lost track. Living day by day seem the only path. Downstream, those days.
That's a little Downstream by Erin Heist. We'll be right back. You're listening to Juneau Afternoon from KTOO.
Sounds wild. Hi, I'm Riley Woodford for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
The sound of roaring walrus fills the air at Round Island at the northern edge of Bristol Bay. Round Island is part of the Walrus Island State Game Sanctuary, one of Alaska's special areas. The Alaska State Legislature designated 32 special areas, more than 3 million acres of some of Alaska's most productive fish and wildlife habitat. The special areas include 12 state refuges, 17 critical habitat areas, and three sanctuaries, Walrus Islands, McNeil River, and Stand Price, which are home to walruses, bears, and other wildlife. In southeast Alaska, Stand Price, also known as Pack Creek, and in southwestern Alaska, McNeil River, are two areas that provide world-class bear viewing. The special areas are managed by the Alaska Department of Fish and Game's Lands and Refuges Program, which is the largest state-managed program of its kind in the country. Many of these areas offer outstanding opportunities for wildlife viewing and outdoor recreation. Many of the state refuges also offer hunting opportunities, such as the Mendenhall Wetlands and the Palmer Hay Flats, where ducks and geese congregate in the fall. For Sounds Wild, I'm Riley Woodford.
KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Akwan. The Clene Dee have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot, once part of the tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations. We'd like to take a moment and say thank you to the individuals who helped us craft our daily land acknowledgement. Gwyneth Cheesh to Vera Starbart, who planted the idea of making it super place specific and guided us on pronunciation. Lillian Petershore, who created so much of the beautiful structure, Ishmael Hope, who gave us additional ideas, and Ernestine Hayes, Bob Sam, and Fran Houston, who gave important feedback. We are grateful to all those offering guidance as we grow as an organization.
Hands and grass, ka eat with the shu yi, we ka shuk a yi tin. Jin kat ka ke jin ta ka na khaya ha an ka gun chish.
This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. A few announcements and updates. First, the Polynesian Voyaging Society's Hokulea Global Launch event, scheduled for tomorrow, Thursday, June 15th, has been moved to the UAS Rec Center due to a forecast of bad weather. Welcome to Juno. Also, the time has been adjusted. The event will start an hour earlier, so it's now scheduled to start at 1 p.m. You can attend in person. There were over 1,000 people at the arrival ceremony last Saturday. However, if you can't attend in person, you can watch live coverage of the event on KTOO 360 TV via cable or via the Roku or Apple TV apps for KTOO 360 TV. You can also watch the web stream at ktoo.org/360TV. For more on the Hokulea's journey overall, visit hokulea.com. That's hokulea.com. Also, local musician Annie Bartholomew's album Sisters of Whitechapel officially releases this Friday, June 16th, and there are a couple of opportunities to hear Annie chat and hear some of this music. First, she will be on KRNN tonight starting at 7 p.m. with host Katie B during stormy weather. You can tune in at 102.7 or 103.1, that's KRNN, or online at kto.org/listen. She will also be on the NPR national show All Songs Considered, which airs on KRNN on Thursdays at 4 p.m., or you can listen to that right now at npr.org/sections/allsongs and look at their latest episodes, and you'll see that. For more on all things Annie and her music, visit anniebegood.com. That's her website. Up next, the Juno Arts and Humanities Council with info on the arts events for the remainder of this month, as well as the upcoming Ruddy Arts Awards and how you can participate in that. First, here is one of Annie B's new songs off the album Sisters of Whitechapel. It's called All for the Klondike Gold.
Snow at Chilkoot Pass, my husband lost his life. I know his prayers to the last were for his lovely wife. I lost my husband, you your son, and you your brother fool. Then let us weep our grief so long, all for the Klondike's gold. All for the Klondike's gold, my love, all for the Klondike's gold. All for the love of Golden Gang, all for the Klondike's gold. Sand beneath its angry wave, no headstone in that dismal land does mark his lonely grave. You lost your husband, I my son, and you your brother Hope. And let us weep our grief so one, all for the Klondike's gold. All for the Klondike's gold, my love, all for the Klondike's gold. All for the love of Golden Gain, all for the Klondike's gold. All for the Klondike's gold, my love, all for the Klondike's gold. All for the love of Golden Gain, all for the Klondike's gold. Like many another, he went alone, no part to help him long. back home to join in your sad song. You lost your husband, you your son, now my brother Boo. Then let us weep our grief so long, all for the Klondike Skull. All for the Klondike Skull, my love, all for the Klondike Skull. All for the love of Golden Gate, all for the Klondike Skull. All for the Klondike Skull, my love, all for the Klondike Skull. All for the love of Golden Gate, all for the Klondike Skull. All for the Klondike Skull, my love, all for the Klondike Skull. All for the love of Golden Gate, all for the Klondike Skull. All for the Klondike Skull, my love, all for the Klondike Skull. All for the love of Golden Gate, all for the Klondike Skull.
Let's have a star party. This is Steve Kosis with the Marie Trek Planetarium. I'm going to talk about what the universe is made of. So it turns out the current understanding of the structure of everything that we know of the universe is that 5% of it is normal matter, and the other 95% is abnormal matter. So it turns out that there's five times more abnormal matter than visible matter, and that is called dark matter. And the other 70% of the universe is what's called dark energy. So it breaks down the 5% normal matter, 25% dark matter, and 70% dark energy. Now, dark matter was first observed from the rotation of clusters of galaxies by Fritz Zwicky in the 1930s. And this evidence of the existence of dark matter was verified by Vera Rubin in the 1970s. Now, dark energy is a more recent component of the universe that was first described in the 1990s when it was noticed that certain types of supernova, which have a known brightness, were much fainter than expected. And after eliminating all their possibilities, the only one left was that the expansion of the universe is accelerating. And this acceleration of the expansion of the universe was not expected. It was actually thought that the gravitational attraction of matter and energy of the universe would cause it to ultimately contract. So this expansion was unexpected. It's called dark energy. And it's much, much less understood than dark matter. And actually, dark matter and dark energy are two separate things. This is Steve Kosis with the Marie Trek Planetarium. We're doing public shows. Our schedule is on our website at marietrekplanetarium.org. Thank you.
Sometimes the news can be overwhelming. We could all use some help sorting out what's important. That's where The Signal comes in. It's KTOO's weekly email newsletter filled with the most interesting and important local and statewide stories that you need to know about. Get clarity on what's going on in your community and the rest of Alaska delivered right to your inbox by signing up for The Signal today. Visit ktoo.org/signal to subscribe.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Akwan. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Joining me now live in studio are Rochelle Bonet and Phil Hipshin from the Juno Arts and Humanities Council. Hello to you both.
Hello. Hi.
How's it going today?
It's going good. How are you?
I'm a little cold, but...
Yeah, it's chilly. Doing great, though.
It's all good. You're doing great? You're doing great. I know we missed... we have a lot to cover. I know we missed First Friday, so we didn't have you on at the beginning of the month to talk about all things art. So I wanted to catch up with that a little bit. And then we're also going to talk about the Kathy Kolkhorst Ruddy Awards that are coming up and how people might be able to participate in nominating those. I want to go over like the categories and who we have and what things people can nominate and all that kind of stuff. So let's start with the remainder of June. We know it's Pride Month as well. And there's a lot of arts events going on. Rochelle, what do we have happening around town for the rest of this month?
So coming up this weekend, we have a web design class for folks. We're hosting that at the Jack. That's a technically art class led by Risa Marvel of Z Squared Studio. So for any artists or local businesses out there looking for how to build a website for the first time, this class is for you. You can buy tickets to that on our website and by visiting us at the Jack. $100 for that and includes breakfast, coffee, and tea. We also have a fresh air market coming up towards the end of the month. That's on Saturday, June 24th from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. And that's going to be outside between the Jack and Centennial Hall.
Is that the first fresh air market of the summer?
It's the second one.
Okay.
Second one.
Yeah. And for those who don't know, what is a fresh air market?
Markets in the fresh air. No, it's a really great community event at the Arts and Culture Center in the parking lot just outside of Centennial Hall. We welcome local artists, artisans, plant growers, food producers, everything you can think of and more.
So this is the reason I'm asking is if somebody's interested in being part of the arts market, how do they do that?
Oh, well, vendor booths are actually booked up for June and July. They sell out super fast. So we don't have any more availability June of July in this month, but we still do have availability for vendors in August and September.
Okay.
And if you're interested in coming to participate, you can call us at 907-586-2787, or you can contact Tracy, who loves doing this stuff. Her email is tracy@jahc.org, and that's Tracy with an I. And she can definitely help you out in getting you up to speed and ready to go for those markets.
Yeah, because I've been to those markets, and they're very cool, and they're a great place to connect with local artisans and all different sorts of things that are going on around.
This one in June is going to be really cool too, because we have Deborah Wood playing her music on keyboard, as well as Douglas Badilla with some Motown too.
Ooh.
So it's going to be there's going to be a lot going on.
Ooh, awesome.
A couple of people that are going to be at this market. We have Landscape Alaska, we have Glow Ink, Juno Woolies, Aurora Designs, and Mudchild Ceramics, just to name a few of the vendors that you'll see.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And actually, before I forget, we are hoping to get a food truck at this market. So if you're out there and you're listening and you own a food truck, give us a shout. We'd love to have you.
If you've been quiet in Juno with your food truck and you're looking to start going public with that, let us know.
Absolutely. Because I'm sure there's a few. Actually, I just noticed that there's all the ones out by the brewing. There's more people out there now in that little area. It's grown. Food trucks are the thing.
Yes.
And, it's a lot of fun. I'm sure, I would assume that probably the two that are right next to the Jack, which is Carrillo's and Pucker Wilson's, they'll probably be open at that point anyway.
They should be.
That's good. Okay, so that's the fresh air market. What else is happening?
This wasn't on my list, but just want to make a plug for anybody who hasn't been to the gallery at the Jack to stop by and see Portable Southeast. It's a new gallery program that we started this past year. It features a variety of different artists from all over Southeast Alaska. It traveled to 5 locations, and it's now in its 6th destination here in Juneau, and then it's complete for this cycle. And really cool exhibit. It celebrates life in Southeast, so definitely stop by and take a look at that.
We had Portable Southeast on many months ago, I think right before they started the tour. And so now it's wrapping up here in Juneau.
Yeah, there's some really cool pieces in the collection, and it's just been cool. I came in kind of like halfway through the rounds of that exhibit, and it's just been cool to see it in concept kind of popping up in all these different communities in Southeast Alaska and then coming back to Juneau.
Absolutely. And that's at the Jack Gallery.
Mm-hmm. It is. Okay. And we hope to do it again, not this coming year, but the year afterwards. So
So like another program on the every other year cycle. Yeah,
that's
I think that's a great cycle for things, right?
It gives people a moment to breathe, you know, and recollect themselves. And then we just
Rock, end of September, right?
Yes.
September, yeah. Coming sooner than we recognize.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Yeah. Actually, I think it's like the third week of September, right? It's like September
21st through 23rd.
Yeah. So that's going to be...
are on sale now.
Yeah, you can get them now. Do it now. Awk Rock is going to be awesome. Okay, but back to June. What else is happening?
We have the another iteration of our piano series coming up on June 30th. That's at 7 p.m. in the Arts and Culture Center. This iteration of the concerts, it's going to be Alexander Tutanov, who I just learned today is recognized as one of the most outstanding virtuosos of the former Soviet Union. Which is really, really cool.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I'm really excited to have such a wonderful and talented pianist. Excited to welcome him to the stage in Juneau. And then he's going to be joined by Franz Felkel, who's such a great violinist, a local born and raised in Juneau. And he's
Everyone knows Franz.
If you don't, come on the 30th and hear him perform. It's wonderful.
And I think we'll have John back on in a couple of weeks to talk about that particular concert as well.
That's good. I think tickets are going to sell pretty quickly for that. It's going to be a really great performance. So buy them early, please.
Yeah. And all of the things that are happening in town, you guys keep track of that and it's always on your website. And where do we go to find that information?
So you'll go to our website at jahc.org and then scroll down and click on the community calendar button. That'll take you to our page where you can see everything that's happening in Juneau. You can see it weekly, you can see it daily, you can see it monthly. Definitely go there to see what is going on.
Yeah, and if you have an event that you want to publicize, arts related or not, anything that has to do with community, you go to the Jack's website and you submit that. We also share that calendar with y'all. We sort of embed your calendar into our website, and you can go to kto.org/calendar, and you can also enter the event there, and it will automatically be put. It's the same calendar, basically.
Yeah.
It's a giant Google calendar that the Jack maintains, and it has so many events on it, and you can't, I mean, for those new to town, that's why I tell people all the time, like, that's the place to go to figure out where to start your journey in Juneau, artistically minded or not.
It's a really great community resource that kind of flies under the radar, and more people should know about it because it really does just have everything.
Yeah.
Like, if you don't know what to do on a weekend, like, check out the community calendar and it will have all the answers for you.
I don't think it's possible to be bored in Juneau.
Definitely not.
Like, if you want to get out of the house, there is something to do, right?
That's why I moved back here.
And for our community of, you know, 30-something thousand, it's amazing. What Kate and I were just talking about that off the air, too, about how talented and wonderful everyone is in this town. And there's so much going on here. And whether you're a supporter or you're an artisan yourself, like, this is a wonderful place to be and sort of get yourself involved in all those things. It's a great resource. Is there more? Should we move to the Ruddy Awards?
We can move to the Ruddy Award, the Kathy Kolkhorst Ruddy Award. Kathy Kolkhorst Ruddy Awards.
Now, let me tell you something. Kathy was one of the most enduring personalities in Juneau. She passed away on September 10th, 2020. She was such a big supporter of the arts. And I moved to Juneau to work at Perseverance Theater like way many years ago. And she was the very first person I met. My first day in Juneau, literally my first day, I went and saw my boss and he goes, "Hey, you want to go on a boat?" and I was like, "Yeah, I want to go on a boat." And so we went on Kathy Reddy's boat. And it was myself and the cast of the show that I was directing, The 39 Steps. And and it was just an amazing experience. And she was so welcoming. And she used to house guest artists. And she used to do so many things. And I know many people listening knew Kathy and her support for the art. So it seems appropriate that these awards were named in her honor. And let's just get that right out of the way, right?
Yeah.
First of all, when are these awards going to be, Phil?
So these awards are going to be imparted to the recipients on July 27th, which is also coincidentally not actually coincidental. We definitely planned it this way. The Jack's 50th anniversary.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah. 50 years of the Jack? Now, is that 50 years of the Juno Arts and Culture Center, or is that 50 years of the Juno Arts and Humanities Council?
Humanities Council.
Are we going to fix that someday? Where the Jack is two things.
Get back to me after sometime later.
ED. I know. We gotta talk about that.
Listen, this is, I've been like wrestling with this concept in my brain late at night as I try to sleep. But yeah, it's gonna be on July 27th. We are planning a very large celebration in the Sea Alaska Plaza, actually, which was very generously donated to us, that space for the use of. For this event.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's going to be really great. We're looking to invite a lot of different diverse community performers, have food trucks. It's just going to be a really great time. So,
is it like an all day kind of a thing or what?
Not all day because it is a Thursday. Yeah. So people are going to be working. But the time frame we're looking at right now is 4:30 to 8:30 p.m. So in the evening. But that's probably going to get fine tuned a little bit.
Yeah. So 4:30 to 8:30 on July 27th, which is a Thursday. Is it on this 27th because that's the actual 50th year day?
That's correct. It's to the day.
Yeah. Okay. Wow. Yeah. That's
we're very literal with things at the Jack. That's what the arts
are. For the 50 years, right? Yeah. Like, the arts are so literal.
Yeah. That's the hill I'm dying on.
Yeah. Okay.
No, it's really exciting though. We're excited to open the awards up to the broader community this year because we kind of reinvented the nomination categories. We're including advancement of community equity and stewardship by an elected official, any form of government, leadership in the promotion of oral traditions, and leadership in environmental health and sustainability. And that can be from an individual or a program or a business or anything.
So, and nominations are open now.
They are open now. They are open through the end of June. So
through June 30th, you have a couple more weeks.
You have a couple more weeks. If you're hearing this, please go online and nominate everyone. the form is open. It's jhc.org/awards-for-the-arts.
You gotta talk to your web person, seriously.
I know.
I'm just kidding. Is that you?
It's me. I will also say, too, there is a handy button on our homepage that you can just click and it'll take you right to the page where you can submit the nomination.
Or if you are having questions or difficulties or anything, just call us. Yeah. Come into the office. We can help you out.
Absolutely. I think that's great. Yeah, I mean, it is easy to remember jahc.org, and if the buttons are on the front page, and that's the best place to do that. So let's go over the award categories, and let's start with these three that you just mentioned. So leadership and promotion of oral traditions, which recognizes individuals or programs who have aided significantly in the growth of indigenous oral traditions, recognizing the crucial nature these traditions play in the health and success of our community.
Yes.
So how did that particular award come about?
So when we started planning for this earlier this year, we were looking at the nomination categories and we just saw a lot of opportunity to grow these in directions that it clearly hasn't been before in ways that are so important to Juno and important to the cultures that are thriving here. And oral traditions are like something that has rightfully been like blooming and flourishing lately because there's so much very pointed hard work going into reestablishing that. And we think that work needs to be recognized.
And are so it says individuals or programs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it could be a person or it could be a business who has a program,
a nonprofit, anyone doing the work is eligible.
All right.
Yeah.
And then the advancement of community equity and stewardship by an elected official. Mm-hmm. Okay, how did that one come about?
So community equity and stewardship are actually the Jack values. So the idea with that one was to see what the work that the Jack is actively striving to put into our community and looking for people who are publicly elected doing that same kind of work and holding those same kind of ideals and striving to bolster equity and access to the arts and humanities in Juno at large, if that makes sense.
Okay, and the third one was the environmental health and sustainability?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. And what is that? That's also an individual or program.
Have you not heard of sustainability before, Boston?
I have, but I'm curious about how that's an arts award.
Well, that's an interesting concept that you bring up, because I think that kind of gets lost in translation a lot of the time when thinking about the Arts and Humanities Council.
Mm.
Like, we are focused on the arts. Obviously, that's so much of what makes Juno tick and what makes Juno so special is the practice of arts in our community. But we also have an obligation to focus on so many other things going on. And we've been doing a lot in technically art and art glasses with food preparation. We just had a cake decorating class that was really
nice.
Cool.
Yeah.
So all these things that you might not think about as being arts, but still are so special and so important.
Well, and in community. The description, I do see here, it clarifies a little bit. It says local environmental health and sustainability is a crucial component of Southeast Alaska's cultural heritage.
Exactly.
Right. So somehow related to that. Okay. And then I want to run down the other awards that are potentially in there. And these are all have been in there before.
Yes.
And what's cool is you can go on, if you think you're like, oh, I want to nominate somebody, you actually go on the page and you can see everybody who's ever won these awards.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So you can see it's a lot of people you would recognize if you're in the arts community.
No repeats.
No repeats. So that's what I'm saying is you can go on there and help yourself figure it out. So we have the exceptional artist, which makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
We have excellence in arts and cultural education.
Mm-hmm.
So that's advancing the arts and education. Business leadership in the arts, which is businesses, and that can be profit or nonprofit, right?
Yes.
They can who are doing things to enhance and sustain the arts. Innovation in the arts. That's an interesting one.
Yeah.
I like that because that one is like finding new ways and inspirational new ways to advance the arts in our community, right?
Doing new and funky things.
Like what kind of things have people won before in that?
Ooh, that's a good question.
I think last year it was Melissa Griffiths and her cake decorating business.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she kind of formed that in the height of the pandemic, and it just like grew to be this amazing business. And she's helped a lot of people with her amazing cakes.
Nice. And the last two, which are so important, which is patron of the arts, which is, I think we can't do what we do without patrons of the arts. Mm-hmm. And that recognizes those people like a Kathy Ruddy.
Yeah.
And then also the Life Achievement Award, which I don't think that one needs any explanation.
I also want to like clarify with the patron of the arts, just because I've gotten a couple questions about that.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't necessarily mean major donors to the arts, which is great if you're able to do that. But there's so many ways to help bolster and empower
longstanding volunteer.
Exactly.
Those kind of things.
Just any way, helping however you can.
Phil and Rochelle, thank you so much for being here today and running down the various different events that are happening for the rest of June, as well as the Kathy Colkhurst Ruddy Awards. Nominations are now open. Go to jahc.org and you can find out all that information. Gunnath Cheese, for being here today. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us, as always.
We'll do it for today's Juno Afternoon. Have a wonderful Wednesday. On tomorrow's show, local DJ Jane Hale annually celebrates Bloom's Day with a celebration of Irish tunes. Plus, the current exhibit, Illustrating Alaska, Artists Making Children Book Exhibits on Display at UAS, and information and announcements from the upcoming race from the Juno Trail and Roadrunners Club. Juno Afternoon airs Tuesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTOO Juno 104.3 and KAUK Juno Auk Bay 91.7. Hello, out the road! Find the show online at ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon, where you can listen to episodes, subscribe to the podcast, or find out how to be a guest on the show. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. Juno Afternoon is a project of the KTOO Arts and Culture team. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Tripp. Thanks, and have a glorious Juno evening.